Welcome to Episode 7 of Bibliotech, the podcast about emerging technologies for academics. This podcast is brought to you by University Affairs Magazine. My name is Rochelle Mazar, and I'm an emerging technologies librarian at the University of Toronto, Mississauga. Every month, you can listen in as I talk about what's new in technology and what we as academics should be paying attention to. It's hard to keep up with all the new software, tools, and gadgets. That's where I come in. Feeling overloaded? With the amount of information being thrown at us on a daily basis, it's no wonder. Emails, phone calls, blog posts, tweets, articles, is your heart rate rising yet? In this episode, I'll give you some tips about how to combat this so-called information overload. There are a few simple ways to make sure it doesn't keep you up at night. By implementing a few rules, you'll feel less burdened by all the information grabbing at your attention on a daily basis.
Well, I just got offline and I'm feeling so fine. I must have had 30 or more. Emails from friends, Lord, where will it end? So much love from these folks I adore. Well, to be totally frank, a few were from banks, offering great mortgage deals. And three, maybe four, were a little hardcore, with a chance to enhance my appeal.
But even one of the pressing issues facing academics on a daily basis is something that goes by the term information overload. You've probably heard about it. The theory goes that we are so bombarded with information that we're paralyzed, unable to think clearly and completely, unable to dedicate ourselves to study or thought or any other sustained activity because of it. Alvin Toffler coined the term in 1964 to refer to the difficulty people have making decisions in the face of a vast quantity of data. Presented with more information about brands, housewives in the 1960s would make poorer rather than better decisions. But the term has morphed and shifted since then. It's come to mean the uphill battle people face daily with the always-on internet. Email, texts, Facebook, Twitter, RSS feeds, buzzing smartphones. We're like rabbits in headlights. We are helpless in the face of this avalanche of information coming at us from our screens, and our intellectual and creative abilities are being destroyed because of it. We are, apparently, losing the ability to think critically and deeply. This, it is said, is the legacy of the information age. I have some issues with this argument. Let's break it down into pieces. First, what do we even mean by information? It's been said that there's more information today than ever before. Information has become a buzzword that everyone recategorizes at will. It's a sort of cipher through which any meaning can be conveyed. So what do we mean by it when we talk about information overload? Is an email information, an instant message, a journal article, a radio news report, a book, a graphic novel, DNA, the contents of Wikipedia, a Google search? Is an antelope running across the savanna information? Is a memory information? Do we have more of each of these things than any previous era? When a medieval European looked at a flower, he didn't just see the flower, he saw its religious, ethical, moral, and historical significance as well. He would have seen a world of metaphor and meaning in that flower, a series of ontological layers and eschatological musing. Someone listening to the earliest versions of the stories in the Hebrew Bible wouldn't have just heard the story of Adam and Eve without any context. All those stories would have existed in his mind alongside dozens of other versions of the same story, with each subtle difference to this new version, indicating a precise moral lesson and meaning he was to take from it. He would always be comparing this story, each word, each phrase, character action, description, and dialogue, with every other version he'd ever heard until now. Isn't that a tremendous amount of information as well? Even before the internet, before Gutenberg, it was conceivably possible to be overloaded by sheer information, if that's what we mean. It's been possible to be utterly surrounded by information inside of human cultures for a very long time. Not textual information, perhaps, not searchable, not available in an inbox or through a search engine, but information nonetheless. So let's be clear what we mean when we talk about being overloaded by information in the digital age. Do you feel overwhelmed by the sheer volume of information as you walk into a large academic library? Maybe you should be, because there's lots there, but few people appear to be so. Do you feel overwhelmed by the front page of Google? Unlikely. Most people don't look through the thousands of hits Google provides to most search terms. They just glance through the first or second pages. That seems pretty healthily un-overwhelmed. But what do you feel overwhelmed by? Facebook? Twitter? Email? Voicemail? Probably. These things never shut off, do they? So I think what we mean by information overload in academia today is less about being overwhelmed by the volume of actual information and more about being overwhelmed by the expectations we think others have of us to use communication technology. We have accepted that we need to absorb and respond to certain kinds of information and communication at a rapid rate. These expectations are largely unwritten and unspoken, so we are creating them for ourselves and for others in relative silence, inventing them as we go along, and making ourselves absolutely crazy. So here are some suggestions and recommendations for how to manage what people call information overload. Let's start with email. I think that's what academics are most overwhelmed by, at least in my experience. There's just so much email, more of it every day. Part of the problem here, in my opinion, is that email isn't designed to expire. I wish email were a little more like food. You consume it and it should be transmuted into something else, maybe something more useful, like a couple of lines of notes. But it isn't. It stays there in your inbox, in a list, making it possible for you to scroll down and see the enormity of your email life. That in itself is overwhelming. Email isn't just correspondence made digital, it's conversation made digital too. Most of that stuff could and should be ephemeral, but digital stuff sticks around until you go out of your way to delete it. So let's tackle the email problem head on. Some suggestions. Don't have just one email account. If you already have more than one, don't merge your email accounts into one. I know this is counterintuitive, but bear with me. It sounds more efficient to have a single email account to check, but it's really not. Every academic should have at least two email accounts, one for work and one for your personal life. Why? It means when you're working, you can focus on your work email if you absolutely have to without your personal email distracting you. While you're working, you must make a choice to check your personal email. You can make that choice, but recognize that it is a choice. And on the flip side, when you're not working, do not read your work email. Give yourself the opportunity to shut it off. You should be able to take the weekend off. You should be able to set a vacation message on your work email, tell your colleagues and students that you are unavailable in a professional capacity, and still send photos of your children or catch up with your old friends. Let yourself be blissfully unaware of work email. Email is rarely used as a vehicle for emergency communication. You can let that one go. Once you've split out your life into professional and personal communication, consider which email address you use for what. Let your professional email be exclusively professional. Don't let Facebook email you at work. You may decide, however, to let LinkedIn email you at work. Don't give out your professional email address to online vendors or others who will try to tempt you to make purchases. You don't need any of that cluttering your work time. As an academic, you have three parts of your life: teaching, research, and service. Two of these often require the use of email. One of them largely doesn't. Need time out to concentrate on your research? Shut the email off during those times. Maybe you have a couple of days a week when you don't check your work email at all. You can put this in your syllabus and let your students know it. You can plan for it. Tell the department staff, tell your colleagues. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, say, are no email days. This doesn't mean you can't be reached if you must be, and it doesn't mean you can't check your personal email to make plans with friends. Answering email is a task, just like any other task. It takes time and effort, and it deserves your attention, so plan for it. Maybe Thursday morning is always going to be a write-off because that's the time you're going to dedicate to answering email. Plan for it, accept it. Don't expect email to just magically float around all your other commitments without being allotted time. Email can only overload you if you let it. Not everyone is in a position to be able to do this, but most academics I know are. There's a computer assigned to you at work and one you have at home. Consider what you do with each of these. Do you really need an email client to download your work email onto your home computer without you asking it to? Do you need it to chirp at you with every incoming message? Do you need that constant reminder? I must admit that I'm pretty chained to my email, largely because it's the preferred method of communication for most of the faculty at my institution, and I'm usually on call to help with courseware issues. I like to get those solved as quickly as I can. Sometimes I'm checking and answering email on Sunday mornings or late into the night on a Wednesday. But when I do those things, I know I am actively making a choice to do so because I have sought out my work webmail. I don't allow my personal devices to auto-download work email. I don't need my machines encouraging me to overwork. I can do that just fine on my own. It's important that you make email a choice, not a default. When I first got my iPhone, I discovered something that made my blood pressure hit the roof. By default, my email app was sitting in the little dock at the bottom of my screen, the most prominent spot on the device. Email gets pride of place on most devices, probably because it's the most used application. Every time I looked at my phone, I saw how many messages were waiting there for me. When I was off at a conference trying to concentrate on all the great ideas swirling around me, all I could see was the number of unread messages I had. You could say, "Put the phone down, Rochelle," but let's be reasonable. I just hid the email app. I have it a couple of screens in, so I have to dig for it. I will dig for it, because email is important, but I put it off to the side a bit. I give myself a bit of breathing room. My iPhone also vibrates or chimes by default whenever I get a new message. Do you really need to be informed the moment an email comes through? Shut that setting off. Take back your time. It's not like you're likely to forget to check your email, right? So pick your times. Don't let your devices dictate it to you. You can always switch those settings back on if you really need to know. Beyond email, we've got social media. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all kinds of things. How do you keep up with all this stuff? If what you need is permission not to keep up, let me be the one to grant it to you. It's okay. You don't have to read it all. Don't think about any of these things as sources you have to read from start to finish, like a book. I've noticed some Twitter clients show you all the tweets you've missed since you last checked. That's really daunting, and I think missing the point. Don't bother reading everything. Read the last few tweets. If something really interests you, you can dig back and see what you missed. If you're interested in what's going on with a particular person, you can read over their Facebook wall or their Twitter stream at any time. That stuff is archived. You don't need to see it as it happens. The speed at which it appears seems to make us forget that all this stuff is locked in for all time. You can check it later. I think of Facebook as my self-updating phone book. I look at it when I need to contact someone or when I want to know what's going on with someone. Otherwise, I largely leave it alone. I have a theory that part of the reason why Google Buzz failed to catch on is that it took the functionality of Twitter and added the burden of email. If you switch Buzz on in your Gmail account, you'll see what I mean. It lists unread Buzz posts like unread email messages, and the number in my case was always in the hundreds. Looking at that notification just made me tired. I switched it off after about 3 days. I don't need that kind of pressure. Academics have a long history of managing the volume of academic material in a very intelligent way. Everyone has a set of journals in their field that they watch. Either these come in the mail or you watch a digital feed for them. If you want to know the moment new material is published, talk to your local librarian about setting up a feed reader to capture new articles as published by your favorite journals. They may already have something in place, and you can probably also get a feed of all the new books purchased by your library just in your field. So you can quickly glance over new articles and new books in one place. When new journals appear that are of interest to you, you can add them to the mix as well. I've always thought that it would be great to offer this kind of service to faculty via the library's website, so that if you're needing to do some work in someone else's field, or you just want to get inspired or do some multidisciplinary work, you could look at your colleagues' feed pages too. See what your colleagues are keeping up on. Let the experts filter content for you. This is a lot of information, but it's targeted and useful. The speed that it appears can only help you. As long as you keep the content very specific, limited, and relevant, and weed it regularly, the speed of content can only be a good thing. Are you feeling overloaded by information technology? Try to identify why. Too many emails from students? One great suggestion is to set up a discussion board inside your local courseware, Blackboard, WebCT, DesireToLearn, Moodle, whatever you use, and get students to ask their questions there instead of emailing you. If the question is about the course, it would be better for you and for the other students if that question happens in a more public forum. You don't need to answer the same question personally dozens of times. Let students create an FAQ, a frequently asked questions section, using a discussion board instead. We already have the skills to deal with other forms of media. We shut the TV off when we've had enough. We switch the radio off when we need some silence. We just need to apply the same logic to email, social media, and our various devices. Remember that everything related to technology is a choice. Take nothing for granted. Claim back your time. It doesn't make you a Luddite or any less tech savvy. In fact, knowing when to shut off distracting technologies might be the latest form of literacy. That's it for this episode. What do you do to ensure that you don't feel overloaded by all the information that's out there? Send me your tips by posting a comment at the bottom of this podcast page at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Rochelle Mazar.